It is. Okay. I hope my mic is connected. The story is, what did I say last week that we have to talk about? I know what I have to talk about. I just don't know the answer to the question. Or I know a little bit of it. All he said is that we talked about a lot of different things last week. Which were? You said.
The main point was that, was in the side point, which was ended up taking a lot of time, was that amida is based on the actions that you do. So like the sum of the actions that you do and not some internal measurement of your temperature, something like that. But then you're saying that the middle means the right, it's just the right action. I'm trying to figure exactly how is even a middle. Meaning, you're going to have courage. The middle is to have courage. The things that are not... Those other things
so
are
what we talked about, which were the things that we're not talking about, is that there's a whole bunch. Let's go back. Okay. There is a question that goes like this. We already know that we want to be happy. I'll give you the whole chazuras hashid. Hold the sheet. We already know that you want to be happy, which is the highest, the best thing. The best thing is to be happy because that's what people want to be for no reason. Right. That's the goal. Achon. Remember? The one thing that you don't give a reason for is being happy. Which means being the best kind of you. It doesn't mean feeling happiness, but that's another whole drusha. And the being happy is about doing what you are well, doing what you should be doing well. That's what makes you happy. Which is why the human happiness or the human perfection consists in living in according with virtue. Virtue is just another word for excellence, perfection, right? For what is, like in everything we say, something like the good and the doing well are the same for everything. Being cameraing well is the same thing as being a good camera. So humaning well is the same thing as being a good human, right? So, therefore, being a good human and a happy human means acting in accordance with virtue, right? There are a few kinds of virtue, which we're not very much concerned with right now, the distinctions of them. Mostly distinguished into what's called character virtue. I don't like how the camera looks. We have to lower the whole thing. You're not. Put the whole thing lower. Not that. And then I have to not wear a white shirt. That's another issue. No. Take the whole thing and put it down. This big stick in the middle, turn the butt thing and put it down a bunch. Probably that way. Yeah, and then make the camera straight instead of like pointing down. So it should actually go on my face, mostly. There's one other thing that you turn somewhere that does it. I don't know which.
I don't know. I don't want to miss. I'm
You're not going to mess nothing up. Don't worry. Have some courage. No, it doesn't look like it's that one. It doesn't turn by itself. You have to like loosen it and then turn it, right?
Oh, that was not good.
That was the one. Now you know which one it is.
Yeah.
See? Very basic thing to find out how things work. You break them and you see which part breaks.
True.
Basic rule of debugging.
That's good, right?
Very good. Now, better. Color is still off, but that's my fault. Okay. Kitzer, remember, there's a few kinds of being good, which have to do with few parts of the soul, and all of that. And the Kitzer Amas, and now we're discussing specifically what we call character virtues, things that have to do with feeling and action, not with knowledge and things like that, although they're not disconnected from knowledge, because everything needs a kind of knowledge. We were through this a little bit already. Right? Now, being a good person means doing good things. Right? Is that what it means?
Enlightened to do them? Wanting to do them?
But, right, there's this but, which we will elaborate later in, at length in the discussion of the discussion of self-control virtues versus being virtuous or having not self-control, but liking it. But in short, nobody calls someone good if they're against doing good things, if it hurts them, if it pains them, if they don't find pleasure in it, which is why pleasure is a very important thing to talk about, what you like, liking, right? Which is why being good consists, or being a good human, especially a happy human, because also one of the things that you won't be if you're fighting with yourself all the time is happy. This is also something that has to do with the whole thing boiling out of, or boiling down to happiness, which is one of the reasons why we're always after liking what we do instead of forcing ourselves to do the right thing. Right? This is why people like Immanuel Kant, who are explicitly against eudaimonian ethics or ethics based on happiness, also have the definition of ethics as doing something that you don't like, or acting out of duty and out of the motive of duty instead of out of the motive of what is best for me or what is objectively best. Right? But in any case, that's another whole drush. And now we're in the part where so there are good things, but it still consists of doing good things and liking to do them, right? And having whatever it means that you like to do the good things, okay? That's the kind of thing that being good is. But we still don't know what kind of thing or what kind of things are the good things to do, right? So specifically the kind of good things which we call as pertaining to character, because there's other kinds of good things which are higher perfections, really, which it has to do with knowledge and understanding, which we're leaving on the side for now, although those are the best things, and there's a whole other discussion about the life of thought, right? Life of contemplation. Now we're still talking about like something like a social life, a political life, an active life. Now, this is the question. Do you understand how I got you to this question? In other words, we already know what kind of thing virtue is, why virtue, we already discussed and so on. What kind of thing virtue is, or being a virtuous person is, we already know. It's a kind of having a kind of something we call like something like a habit, or a habit together with a liking, or habit together with a liking, together with a kind of judgment that allows you to see what is good and so on. That's what kind of thing. But what is it, right? Or we could say, which sort of this kind of thing is it? Someone's by the door. Is it that makes things good? We still don't, that makes actions good, and therefore the habits or the character traits that make you want them good. We still don't know that, right? No. That's where we are in the course of the book, and that is where the answer of the middle thing comes in. This is very important to realize, at least in the source in Aristotle, where this idea of a mean even enters into the discussion. The place where it even entered into the discussion was, and this is how we organized it, at precisely this place, after we know what he says, we know the genus, we know that what kind of thing virtue is, but we don't know which of it is, right? In other words, there's many habits, there's many people can do many different things, they can, and therefore they can have many different, what we call the middah, but not really a good word. We should call it the trait, the character trait, the habit is maybe a better word. Even that is not a good word. Aristotle just calls it a hexis. Now, you have a Greek word to put in place of that, which we don't know what it means. But some kind of condition, right? Something, some kind of state of the soul or act. Habit is the Latin translation, habitus, which gives us in Hebrew things like right, second nature, which is kind of a nature, right? Or how did the Rambam call it? A kind of kinyan. And I said a wrong pshat on that last time. I looked it up. Kinyan, the reason it's called kinyan is not because it's something that you buy, although that's in some sense true. It's because it's something that belongs to you. And it's translated via the Arabic, this Ibn Tibbon. I'm confusing you now, right? In any case, Ibn Tibbon translated this from Arabic, because in Arabic, what Aristotle called hexis, usually, and there's some other words, and in Latin it's translated as habitus, was translated as something like malakat, which is some the same shayrish as melech in Hebrew, like originally, something like leadership or ownership or belonging. And they say it about you could own anything, and it's like something that you own. That's how we got the word kinyonim, for this. And of course, in the Mishnah, I think he's thinking of the Mishnah that says things like Kenyan Torah and things like that, and he interprets it that way, but he explicitly says in Pirush HaMelech that that's how he got the word Kenyan for these kinds of things. And he says that I mean something like a nature. A nature, what makes a thing do what it does. So, anyways, this thing, not just to get back to where I am, so we know what this is. Hopefully we know what this is. That's what we spend a lot of time figuring out what that is. But there are many of those, right? You could be good ones and bad ones, right? So we need some word that which will distinguish the good ones from the bad ones, right? If you know Aristotelian logic, you know that this is called looking for the specific difference or the species instead of the genus. Remember this? Like in an example of if we ask what a human being is, first we ask of what kind of thing he is, right? What sort of thing he is. We say a human being is an animal, and then we say, but which kind of animal? And we say he's a rational animal. So that's the difference between humans, and in Hebrew it's translated as a hevdal, the difference between a human animal and a different animal, which is which kind of animal is he, right? So first, it's two ways of saying the word kind, right? Same thing, like what is he, which kind of thing is he, is an animal, that's the bigger group that he belongs to, and which group does he belong to in that, that's what we call the species usually, or in Hebrew, sug and min, that's the Hebrew translation for these things, sug is the bigger one and min is the smaller one, and that's what's defined by the specific difference. In the same exact way, we know what kind of thing good middos are, or virtues are, right, they are habits, but we don't know which of those they are, right, so what's the specific difference that makes a habit into a good habit. And for this, Aristotle gives us the answer of the middle way. So now we know what this whole middle way is for, this why it exists. And of course, this is what we call the definition, right? A definition usually is both of these things. The definition in Aristotelianism is a geder, okay? If you ever went to yeshiva, you heard the word geder. Geder is a word that Jewish Aristotelians made up, also probably through Arabic or something, to translate the word Aristotelian word definition, and it doesn't have the exact meaning as definition in English. Definition has this very precise meaning in Aristotelianism. Definition means giving the genus and the kind and the species of a thing. The definition of a human being is a rational animal. The definition of a kinyan is a masa that makes kmiras das, chavesh, and so on. Right? Definition of the good activities, and therefore, or of the good human being, is having middos which are intermediate. That's how we get to the definition. That's why whenever someone is going to present you the theory, he's going to give you the most general definition always. That's just how science is supposed to work. And that's why we usually get this, but it's important to realize that that's all it's trying to answer. It's trying to answer the exact kind of thing that good things are. But remember that we're still talking about a kind, right? You remember that this definition, telling that a human being is a rational animal, doesn't tell you very much about a human being. It's telling you, at the most, something like, okay, I see there's animals, and I sort of, animals are things that move under their own volition, or some kind of, that's also a definition. and are things that move under, you notice, right? Animals are things, or maybe I should say living things, that move by themselves. So I give you what kind of thing is, and which one of that kind it is, right? You'll notice that, naturally, we also give definitions always in this way, but this is, they defined it very precisely. Right, in the same way, but that doesn't tell you much about a human being. All it tells you is how to distinguish a human being from other animals. And therefore we say this is what is most human being mostly is most, right? Because that's what defines him. But that doesn't give you a lot of information. All it gives you is his science is about looking for like most general definitions always of everything. And then we can drill down and drill down and drill down and drill down. There's a very famous Porphyry's tree which shows you how you can drill down from body all the way to some very specific thing. If you haven't seen the picture, it's a nice picture, you can look it up. But the reason I'm telling you all of this is just so you understand how this language works and how saying that the definition of good actions is the middle is not supposed to give you much more than that. Make sense? Is that helpful? And it's not supposed to give you a lot more than saying that human being is a rational animal, like famously the guy, you know, the famous guy that made a joke, what was the Diogenes or someone, came into the Platonic Academy and said he has a man because one day they were playing with definitions and they said that human beings are featherless bipeds and they brought a chicken, you know, or something like that, right? A plucked chicken. They plucked the chicken and said, here's your man, right? And that's a joke that's trying to express. Of course, that's not the correct definition of a man anyways. But it's a good joke that shows you how useless definitions sometimes are, especially if you get the wrong ones. But even if you get the right ones, they don't give you a lot of information. And you might, in the same way, this definition of good things as the middle things doesn't give us a lot. Or if you want to work backwards, and he doesn't.
To prove that it's not that the species is incorrect, because it's not a differentia, right?
Right, and then that was wrong, exactly. Yeah. If you find he found an exception which shows that it's not the correct definition, of course. But it's still not extremely informative. I'm not going to tell you a whole lot about a human being. Even the rational animal thing doesn't tell you a whole lot, unless it's worked backwards, right?
If you, we'll
just to understand, when this is what caused, and you remember that this is really because, as we keep on discussing, the Rambam always presents things backwards, or really in the correct way, but in the wrong way for learning, right? Remember that Plato told us several times that there's a up, remember, right? There's a top-down way of learning and a bottom-up way of learning, right? The way up is the way down, but they're different, right? The way up is collection and the way down is division, right? When you learn from the way that, from the principles to their particulars, or from the particulars to the principles, right? Or sometimes you call it induction and deduction. That's not exactly the same thing, right? Or in other words, if I start from a general definition and then I tell you, and this is a case of that, then this is the correct way of things, right? Because reality has primarily, and even Aristotle thinks this, the rules, the classes of things, or the forms of things, the definitions of things, are primary ontologically to their cases, right? This is why the Rambam tries always to teach this way, and it also strikes us as a logical way to teach. If you read the Halacha, also the Rambam tries to give you the klal before the prat. Of course, you'll notice that the Mishnah doesn't do this. And people say this is because the Rambam is more philosophical than the Mishnah. It's precisely the opposite. I'm going back to my same hack as I say always, but I never said it in this way yet. You have to understand something. The Rambam is less philosophical than the Mishnah. This is just because I reminded myself of someone saying this week again the same shtist that Chazal are not philosophers. They're much more philosophical than the Rambam, that's for sure. Why? Because the Rambam gives you the result of philosophy, which is the correct way, right? He starts the tree from the top like the Rambam starts with the first principle, you know, you saw this, and it goes all the way down to Hedchas Sanhedrin. You know, you realize, right? Ramam Sefer Hamada, all the Sefer Shafim. The worst, the last thing in the order of reality is that there's halacha that you have to follow the judges, you know, like Sefer Shaftim. It is, because that's how the world looks. That's just about managing people down here who are having conflict and stuff. Last thing is that Mashiach should come. That's the smallest thing. End of Hilchas Melachim.
You have to do everything else before you have
Shaifet,
right?
Yeah, some, okay, maybe, no, but going, we work the opposite. Now, like Aristotle quotes Plato, Plato used to say, are we going to the principles or coming from them? Generally, philosophy is supposed to be going to the principles, not coming from them. The goal of philosophy is to get from the principles back down, right? But that, when what we usually identify as philosophy is actually learning, which is, we find ourselves in ignorance in this world. We're starting to think we could see, and then we try to ascend to the principles, right? Now, the Rambam, for example, this is a very good example of the Rambam doing it backwards, right? Actually, in Hilchos Deis, he starts a little bit with the details. But, for example, here in Hilchos Shmoneh Perukim, where he just started and gave you this definition, it says, let me give you the final result, because he's like making things short and easy for you, supposedly. He doesn't want to burden you with all the dialectic, with how we get to this. He just tells you, well, the middle way is the correct path. Thank you very much. Problem is that since we don't even know how to deduce this, we don't know how did he get to this? And people have very wrong opinions of how they got to this, because they just imagine things which are not in the text or not anywhere. And therefore, the only way to read the Rambam is dogmatically most of the time, instead of philosophically or dialectically. Versus the Mishnah, for example, I'm just saying this because I have to finish my thought about that, and it's very important. Versus the Mishnah that, for example, always, even when the Mishnah gives a klal or a general form or general definition, it's always posterior, it's always after the details, right? The Mishnah would always give you a long list, and they say, Zaklal, like Mordechai will say, Zaklal asiyamai, like, find one more detail, because what is Zaklal asiyamai? Zaklal is because it's a klal. No, who cares about klalim, right? No, of course there's a klal, there's always a yoitzim and a klal also, but the klal is always after the details, because otherwise, and it's true, even if you read the Rambam and you start something with him, starting with the definition, you don't really understand what he's saying. Only if you're coming to it after the Gemara, and you know, oh, so this is the general definition that makes sense of everything. Right, in the same way, that's why I think that the Gemara and the Mishnah are actually a lot more philosophical than the Rambam. Of course, they don't discuss theology too much, but even when they do, they're more philosophical than the Rambam is. Good pshat, right? People always think that the Rambam is logical and the Mishnah is illogical. It's just the opposite. Rambam gives you the results of a certain logic, and that's why the Rosh, and I said in my shiur last Thursday, I think that he's right now. The Rosh quote a great man in Barcelona that said that we don't understand Rambam if you don't learn Gemara. Remember? Very famous statement, because there are some people that say that we have to pass an halacha from the Rambam. The Rambam told us we don't have to read Talmud anymore. And the Rosh, arguing with this, said that it's all... Firstly, he disagrees that the Rambam is an authority, so he thinks that he can say it just like the Rambam could. But he says, even if the Rambam would be an authority, he doesn't think that the people that read the Rambam understand the Rambam. And he quotes a great man in Barcelona that told him that the parts of Rambam where he learned the Talmud for it, he understands the Rambam, and the parts which he didn't learn, like Kaddishim, things like subject that they didn't read in Yeshiva over there. So he doesn't know the Gemara, he doesn't understand the Rambam. This is also somewhat of an indictment of the Rambam's project, which tries to make the Gemara unnecessary and turns out to not actually succeed. But I think more significantly, it's a really true point that you don't really get, like, even if I tell you a man is a rational animal, you're like, okay, what do you want from my life? If you notice, wait, we've been going through all the things that man do, and then we're trying to like think that what is the essence? What's like one thing that makes that includes all of these things? And I get to this, then you understand that I gave you, got you, helped you somewhat. I'm giving you something. But if I didn't go through all the details and I just started with this, you realize that it's somewhat of an empty. It doesn't have a much meaning. So akitza shachnorich and kitzurim and klolim are very good after you know the details, not before. There is problems with this, of course. There's also pedagogical problems. It's very hard, and most people don't ever get to the rules. That's why the Sefri says you should learn Torah klolim and let me odom kones tevre Torah klolim v'matziem prutim. But anyways, the Rambam follows that advice of the Sefri. But it's a good way. That's why we learn Mishnah, teach Mishnah to kids and so on. But even the Mishnah is not really that kind of klolim. Okay. In any case, I'm getting lost in this discussion. My point is just that in the same way here, we have to understand that the first thing that the word middle is doing is to give us a general definition for all the good things. That's the important thing, the important work that it does. Of course, this helps us somewhat. Of course, if you find an exception, there will be a problem with our definition. I'm not saying that it's not supposed to include everything, and it's supposed to be the correct definition, but it's not supposed to be the most informative definition at all. It's not looking to be informative. It's looking to be something like the opposite of informative. It's looking to find the essence of it. Now, of course, we have to explain why we think that this is a good candidate for being the essence. And there would be several ways of going about this. Right? Several ways of explaining why we think that the essence of the good habits and the good activities consist of them being a mean. And what I even mean. And that's why I discussed. And we also have to understand what I even mean by saying this. So the first thing I will tell you, should I say that first or say first the other thing? You understand my point? That's one point that I'm making.
You're saying that we should first say what the
really we should first. In some sense, yes. That's not what Aristotle does, so I can't say that that's the correct method because it's not what anyone really does. He does do it in a little bit. In other words, even the Rambam does it a little bit. In other words, there's like four. If you look in in his book, in the Ethics, in I wrote down exactly where he does this, but I don't have my chapter numbers and stuff here. But if you look like here, you'll see that he does three or four different explanations of why he thinks that virtue is a mean. He always uses also examples, just to be clear. You can't do this without examples, which means that we always assume that you already know something. Like if I tell you, for example, right? If I tell you some parts of some thing, like he takes right to take always the first two virtues that we talk about are temperance and courage, right? And if I show you that it's obvious to everyone, if I can show you, for example, he doesn't exactly do this because I don't think this is enough to show you that virtue is a mean, but he right away shows you, if I tell you, look, courage, which you think is a good thing already, of course, if you don't think that a courage is a good thing, like most people in Lakewood think courage is a bad thing, then you're totally out of the discussion. But if you think courage is a good thing, you could also see that that means that being coward is a bad thing, but also that being a rash is a bad thing. Being something like too courageous or being irresponsible, right? That's not the same thing as courage. You could see that it's not the same thing, and I could show you how, therefore, my best guess, my best bet as getting something that actually explains what kind of a thing courage is to say that it's the middle of this subject of courage. Or the same thing with temperance. You have to assume that you already understand. You might have not noticed it, but I have to show you. I think courage is actually a very good example. Temperance is a more complicated
example. There's no spectrum of courage. I mean, you could have a spectrum whether you personally have it or not, to some extent. Courage itself does not have a spectrum. Courage is courage. I mean, the other way to understand is that it's a spectrum.
That's for sure not what we're trying to get at, that there's a spectrum and you should be in the middle. Right. That's we already went through some mistakes that people have about. So that the reason they have these mistakes is because they don't actually realize how we got to this, why we do. There are other reasons why people get to ideas like golden means, and that golden mean is not what Aristotle talked about. Another, I don't know if I gave that to Usher yet.
Yeah.
I did
talk
about it last week. So I don't keep track. I'm not in the golden mean for this. But yes, you can see that, for example, we praise courage. Courage is a virtue. And we can also see that running away from everything or not facing any fears and not facing any... I guess fear is the thing that courage is against, or danger maybe, is not courage. That's, we have even a word for it. We call it being a coward. And we could also see that that doesn't mean that courage is the most of that. This is the important thing. I think that this is intuitive to most people when you talk about courage. You could also see that therefore I should just be the one that jumps into that always volunteers to go first in the war, you know? Well, no, you shouldn't always volunteer. Sometimes you're just being stupid, right? And then I ask God, okay, so therefore what the virtue consists of is not, right? And we could show that this is this works in a similar structure for everything. So this would give me a structure for everything. But I could show you that what the virtue of courage consists of is not jumping into facing dangers with equanimity or something like that. That's not what it consists of. Because if it would have consisted of that, then you would have had to always want the most of it. It's sort of the opposite. The reason why we get this idea of the middle, of the mean as being the correct, is because we assume that you want to be the best. Just the opposite than other people, right? And if what defines courage as a good thing is the courageousness of it or something like that, then you would want, or in other words, is the facing dangerousness of it, then you would always have to be facing the most danger. But you see that that's not correct. So I can show you very easily, so I ask you, what's the difference between courage and stupidity? And you say, well, stupidity is just too much courage. Well, that sounds, in some sense you could say that, if there's like a spectrum of facing danger, then too little is cowardness, and too much is rashness or stupidity. I like the word stupidity for this, actually. Mm-hmm. And courage is something in between, right? But you understand that this in between is something like a mushal. It's an analogy. It's not really, it's not the point that you're in between. The point is that I'm showing you that courage doesn't mean jumping into the most dangerous. Courage means jumping into the correct dangers for the correct reasons, right? Being courageous for your country, maybe, when it's in a great danger is a good thing. But being courageous for your lollipop is not a good thing. So it's not about, there's always all of these becauses and whys and hows and amounts, in other words, measures, that make it into a good thing. So therefore, what makes courage good is not that it's courageous, that it faces danger, that it's not afraid of danger. What makes it good is that it's the correct kind. Of course, there is many kinds of correctness. So that's why we have courage and temperance and all the rest of the virtues. Because they're specific, they have specific subjects, and there might be, like we discussed last week, there might be specific sciences and specific habits and specific trainings for each of them. It doesn't mean that just having one of them will give you all of them, although in the most general sense, they are all the same kind of thing. But what it shows you is that this is the kind of thing that is. Does that make sense? This is the first sense in which it is useful, right? In other words, it is a definition that you can understand. Once I gave you this example, and I can show you the same thing with temperance. If you say something like, temperance is something like, what is temperance? Temperance is something that we don't really, especially in Hebrew, also, courage is cost enough, but temperance is the opposite, right? Courage is a noun from virtue. It's a goyish virtue. Somebody would even say, read Aristotle and say, and the Rambam quotes him, and like the first thing he talks about is courage, whereas this guy didn't read the same Bible as me. By the way, in the Bible, courage is praised many times. In Chazal, much less. Or not in the same way. Or at least we don't remember how to read it that way. In Moses Fim, there's never a Shadak Ometz, is there? Mm-hmm. Doesn't Psil Shem talk about having enough courage? Actually, the Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Yosef Karis starts with the virtue of courage, if you noticed. People don't realize, they think it's about fighting yourself only. The Torah, really. Right? So that's what Yudah Ben Tam, I am an Avi. Kal Kanum of Azkanesh, Azkanum is courage. Right? And it says, that's the virtue of courage. actually a very important virtue, but people don't really talk about it enough. Or if they talk about it, talk about it in funny ways. So courage is the Galatia virtue. And temperance, we think, is like a frum virtue. And we think that it means also an extreme. The Rambam is going to go on and on and on about this.
Well, that's why you might not want to talk about it in certain situations. People might take it to mean a messed up idea.
No, I just need to take another example so we see that this is a general rule, right? But in the olden times, in Greece, in Athens, everyone knew that there's four virtues, and two of them are courage and temperance, right? And temperance means something like, it has in its, by the way, the word temperance has in it almost, it's sometimes translated as moderation, right? Or in Greek, it's sophrosyne, which I don't know what it translates to exactly. Sophrosyne or something like that.
Okay.
And sometimes you see it like written at that in English also. Or moderation, right? Moderation relative to pleasures, specifically. But we can see from that, in the way it's taken, and anyone in Athens at least would understand that when you say that, you don't mean someone who takes has no pleasure in his life. What it means is he's moderate relative to pleasure. He's not taking the pleasure all the time. He's not, you know, not some kind of... how do you call it? I don't know. Nentan in Ivrit, they say. How do you say it in English? Pleasure seeker. Too much of a pleasure seeker.
Hedonist, but we don't really mean...
Yeah, but hedonist is not a good definition. Yeah. That's why I don't want to use that. Because that's really a philosophical stance. Right, and we say that, but everyone understands in the same way. I could show you very simply that, well, I don't mean that Aristotle himself noticed that this is something that he has to explain here right away, and you'll see in the Rambam also quotes it the same way, or literally the same way. I don't know if I showed you that. But we don't really realize this so easily, because when I tell you should be temperate, you should be less of a baltav, right, of Yiddish, less of a frese, then you think that what I mean to say is that the virtue is not to be a baltav at all. And people make this mistake. And there's a reason why they make this mistake. And that's because almost nobody has the problem of being too little baltava. Even the people that pretend, usually. Almost nobody has that problem, so it's not like we really have to get some people to have more pleasure in life. I actually think that nobody does. I think that some people pretend that they have this problem, but it's just a question of ideology. It's not a real question. Now, we're not talking about ideology. You know, I don't know if it's not relevant to you at this point. Okay. I have a bunch of friends going around that, you know, the teaching yeshiva that you shouldn't enjoy life. And gosh, but really you should. And I'm looking at this guy. Do you know anyone in yeshiva that doesn't enjoy life? Why are you giving me this drisha? It's just a question of ideology. Who cares about ideology? Ideology is fake anyways. That's what Marx said, right? In practice, what I mean to say is that this is very simple. That all the people going around and saying that, you know, the world is good, you should enjoy your body and your life, and unlike the supposed frum people who are against this, do you know any frum people that don't actually enjoy their life? Yeah. I don't know any such people.
People who like just are tortured souls, regardless.
They will find a way to be tortured on every side.
They blame it on that. It's not. Yeah.
No, but it's not like people like the yeshivish chinuch is like against enjoying life, or the chassidish chinuch. Well, it's true that we talk that way. It's true that we talk against Tavis, but guess what? I have a teacher, very frum and very like precious, and he told me like he doesn't understand like people that give it like you have to give a drachet to the chassanim that he should enjoy himself more. Like seriously, the Asara does a very good job of teaching everyone to everyone. He doesn't think he needs help. If you need help for the moderation part. Like, okay, don't overdo it. Keep your mind with you in some sense. Like, some people, I meet people that seem to think that really nobody's enjoying life. But I think that the reason is because people over-index on ideology. See, like, we hold that Olam Hazeh is going to... Okay, who cares what you hold? Holding is... Doesn't make any difference what you hold. And maybe, like you're saying, some people get tortured by it. But really, how many people really take these things seriously? Like, five? I was in yeshiva, very from yeshiva. No, but everyone enjoyed it. Okay, so they have shvacha asogas. Who cares? So you enjoy your pizza instead of enjoying some fancy restaurant. That's not a big difference.
About the literature version of the guys you're talking about, and they're always like, so you took it seriously? Literally? Like, that's weird. Like, no one else did.
Yeah, like some OTD people. But they're also pretending, because even the yeshiva, I know the guy. I'm telling you, this guy that told me this drusha, like, he's very something. He could give you a fight against, like, this Litvish chassanan or people they teach you about. And Lamaz, I know exactly what food he likes, and he makes sure to buy it for Shabbos, because even for the weekdays, like, it's not like he's not enjoying his life. Of course, he's trying to control himself, but who is against self-control? Right? It becomes very funny. I think that we people are over, and that's why I said the over-index on ideology. Like, we hold. Okay, so you hold. That's why even Aristotle says we don't really need to talk about this problem. We don't even have a name for that person. He makes up a name. He says, let's call him insensitive, but insensitive doesn't really mean this. He's making up a name just so his structure should work, that we have the too much and the too little.
Some people are sterilized to certain indulgences.
Oh, yeah, some people are asexual also, supposedly. I don't believe them. Anyways, but maybe they are. Who knows?
No,
also,
I mean, certain people just...
But not because of the mashgiach. The stomachs are not like that.
Okay. Yeah, but I know certain people that just aren't moved by certain, like...
Okay, and what's wrong with that? I mean, like, what? But why are they not moved? I actually don't know those people. I mean, there's some people that are not don't have enough, don't have a very developed emotional life or imaginative life or something. They don't enjoy films or something. Okay.
People, I don't know. I think my grandfather doesn't enjoy life enough.
Doesn't enjoy life enough?
No, he won't turn on the heat in the...
But it's funny.
Wait, is he like a Holocaust survivor?
It's funny that you're saying... literally whatever's on sale. That's it.
Okay, well, that's fine. But what's the problem with that?
That's the problem with that.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same
thing. By the way, there is a problem with that.
I know
that's a different meter.
They're annoying to us. But
that's a separate meter. I don't think it's the same meter.
Probably has to do with poverty and stuff like that.
No, it's not like $5,000 checks to every grandkid on Hanukkah. Like, he's very
generous. Yeah, but maybe he was brought up... like it's. I don't know. I know what you mean, but I don't think it's
that. Because it was brought up. It doesn't matter.
That's
like
the meter.
No, I think it's a over...
It's like a stinginess, though.
No. No, he's very generous.
He's just himself. Maybe he should be.
I think also he's just totally like unprioritized at all, and like he doesn't realize it. But like maybe your grandkids don't want to come over because you just don't turn on the heat.
I know what you mean, but I don't think it's. I don't think we could call it over temperance. It's something. Maybe it is actually. Okay, but I think usually this kind of people who had hard childhoods and that. Grew up in poverty and they got used to that you don't really turn on the heat because it costs too much money or something like that.
No, you just...
I don't know.
Even if that's why, you're just telling me the story of why.
Yeah, I'm saying it's not... Okay.
He's still doing it. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah, but like it's a survival
problem. Complicated reasons for why I get angry. It's not really anger, it's just insufficiency.
No. Okay, I get it. I don't know.
It's an action, or it's a way of acting.
Could we say that that's bad? Mm-hmm. You think it's bad? Yeah, I think it's bad.
Grandkids won't come over, so...
Well, that's a different problem. That's like lack of empathy or something. Nah. Like you don't. Okay, maybe you don't turn on the heat, but maybe the other guy needs to
be. No,
both,
if he knows you're uncomfortable, immediately. He thinks you like it just as much as he does. Why wouldn't you enjoy wearing your winter coat in the house?
I'm not sure. I remember there was the scene that was like this. He was like, he didn't give out cold drinks. And there was a guy that used to invite Bukhrim and Shabbos and Yerushalayim, and he didn't give cold drinks in the winter, because it's in the summer, because it's Tavis. He didn't have air conditioning either, so you could have a tea if you wanted.
No, that's it, right?
And I'm like, you're a good guy. I'm not sure, he was like training us to not have Tavis. I'm not sure what was the idea. But he didn't, not like he drank, he also didn't drink, it's fine, but like, that kind of, even that person, like he didn't enjoy. I don't know, yeah, weird masochism or something.
What would it look like?
We also say everything's relative. Like, it's like,
what would it look like for someone not to enjoy life?
A lot of food, but the food
what would it like for someone to underindulge?
No, but
degree.
We could understand that kind of person maybe is not... Like, I don't really know.
This,
like, it depends on your like picture of like the ideal human being. To me, that's not ideal. But maybe I'm wrong.
Is there no kitzva achrim? Meaning, is there no harmful degree of this?
Yeah, yeah. Well, harmful degree of insensitivity, of not enjoying food?
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about. Maybe
these
people that we're discussing are actually in that sense, because they seem to be missing a certain human...
experience, really, yeah. A certain part of
they seem
human.
To be missing, yeah, they seem to be missing something. Maybe Aristotle would like agree with that. Like, not only Aristotle, like maybe even like a Platonist, like even an extreme virtue person, like extreme ascetic person could say that they're missing something. Because it's like, part of being human is to get that people like... But based on what is this? I'm just making this up because that's what I like.
I don't know. I can say about what I like. I think that it's normal to like certain. There's something I think. There's something.
It's not about
in
normal.
A conversation with
right.
Someone
you could say
who
something rich. Like we talked about something like has a rich life. Like something like you know the difference between salt and pepper. I don't know. Like an extreme example, right?
Yeah.
They're both the same, right? They're both like sort of sharp and that neighborhood.
Yeah, but it's not even in one avenue.
Is that like?
Specifically either. Like, I find that people who are like this...
Sure.
Like, the first of all, they're not turning on the heat. Second of all, they're reheating the same food for 3 weeks in a row. Like, and yeah, it's fine. Beef and peas.
Yeah, it's all the same habit. I get it. I don't know. I don't know what's so bad about it, though.
It's abundance at the table. There's so much beef. It doesn't taste like anything. Like, you're not participating in a pleasurable human experience.
It seems like a different meat that you're discussing, not temperance.
Why?
This guy is the exact opposite.
But we are
talking about. I think, yeah, exactly. It's like there's someone that, like, if the gefilte fish isn't, it's too much cooked or too little cooked, you're not gonna eat it at all. Right. It's like overdoing it. And then someone that it could be like, you know, like all these stores that this wife put the tissues kerosene instead of the fish in the oven and ate the tissues. Whatever. Yeah, like that. Like something is wrong with you. Okay, maybe he's. I can understand those stories as a good thing in the sense of the life of the mind. Like, you're so in your mind, you're not living in this world. Like, okay, said, but as long as you are living in this world, which maybe you shouldn't be, right? That's a different discussion, right? That's what I think, for example, what I personally think, but this is just my personal opinion, I don't know if it means anything. Like, I would say something like this. If a Yid is, like, these stories, he was learning all day and he forgot to put on his shoes or whatever, okay, so he has much more pleasurable life because he's
doing what he likes.
He's contemplating and he doesn't really care about his body. Said it. That has to do with Book 10, with the questions of the contemplative life and so on. But there's some people that don't even do that. If he's not contemplating, he's not doing anything. It's not like he's so into like Shabbos and he doesn't care if there's food. Okay. He just doesn't care about the food. So then, in that sense, like on that level, there might be something weird, something wrong with that. But it's hard to say like what's wrong with it.
I think you can figure it out. Like,
is it as bad as the two? As
the way it happens to be, the reason why the grandkids don't want to come over is not because they think that they're insensitive.
They feel judged.
First of all, that if you get chas v'shalom, you get takeout. You're what are you even doing? Why would someone want to do that? They don't understand why someone would want to do that. And the other thing, it's abundance. And the other thing is, it's like, in some sense, I think they just don't realize that this is like a part of being a human being. Like, to them, it's like they don't even understand why. Like, they're sensitive to things that they understand. They're very sensitive people. Like, they're very sensitive to things that you understand, like, they can understand are worth being sensitive about. Mm-hmm. This just doesn't occur to them, that, like, pleasurable things might be something that you even want or are gravitate towards, yeah, or at least avoid its, you know, its reduction to a minimum.
So you think he doesn't enjoy his beef?
No, he does, but he should be enjoying more.
Yeah, that's the point. He enjoys it very minimally.
Because usually...
Let's put it this way. That beef could look like many things, and he doesn't seem to be moved by those changes.
Usually these things are very relative. Meaning, the person who has much more simple food enjoys them seems the same amount.
Yeah, it could be. Would you say that that person would enjoy it? Would you say something's interesting if that person enjoys it equally, if it's too salty and not salted enough?
No, you're not. Right. Now I'm saying...
Too salty and not salty, and the person's unmoved.
No, I'm saying like less options essentially, and you're saying like
no.
Yeah, like a way of saying this would be something like I saw someone said like.
Join me.
Like someone was a machloekes between Tuch Siddush Rebbes or something, like if you should put salt on your food, or something like that. And I think Rav Binham said that he thinks that someone who doesn't put salt on his food is just like an animal. So cows don't salt their food. You're not being a bigger tzaddik, you're just being more cow. That's a way of saying this. Like, they try to explain. Like, it's human are people that do have some judgment about which food is good. Now, if you overdo that, then you're a fresh. But if you underdo it, you're stamacha, you're a chamar. Chamar is a gross fresh, but also a chamar is a big foolish. He eats grass every day, like the same grass, right? So how do you know the difference?
This is a guy in Lakewood who is not alive. He had a whole speech against ketchup. Ketchup, stop. You don't need it. It's just stop for pleasure. Ketchup is gay. Go to him if you
right. Well, we could also say that ketchup is like vulgar, with like it's this American replacement I'm saying you could make such a ketchup.
It's an absolute flavor bomb. Like whatever you're eating it with, it's just gonna nuke it.
Right, that would be a different argument. That would be like, but also that, you could say, that's too much. Who cares? It tastes good, for what? Right, you're being too refined already. Okay, so I don't know. It's still true that for the most part, again, but these are really, how many other people are there?
Very rare, I've only seen it once.
You see, like, yeah, there's I know such people, but there's, usually it's not. And also, I think even those people usually has to, like, material conditions and that cause this. Like, I don't know many people that are, I don't know many people in my generation that are like this.
Yeah.
Do you?
So it's only one person I know of all the people I've ever met that suffers from underindulgence.
Like, I know people that try to aim at that. Okay, I'm pro-aiming at that because we're mostly too big fresses. That's what I'm trying to get at. But like, if you would get to that level, okay, then we'll worry about turning it back or something.
Yeah. See this.
What?
I see this.
Yeah. They're,
but,
no.
It happens to be Jews that will be a hard time doing this because we all have like a lot of sudas. Like, that's like just a great way to just sit around and enjoy food. It really does the job of like being sure. Like,
so we're all managing to be in big enough fresses. The shallot have two big fresses, but we're not too small fresses.
So, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like if you go to rural America, I think you could maybe find some of this.
Or people that just don't have good food in their whole shtut.
Yeah,
there's like
totally
no,
like
no good restaurant in 300 miles.
Yeah, like, and not because they're doing anything better with their lives. They just like spend a lot of time being disinterested, like in food.
I hear.
But another way, it's a lot of people like that are very big fressers because they eat just like real garbage.
Maybe at some sense, is it just like some kind of depression or something?
Maybe, yeah.
It's
depression.
It seems like the downside is somewhere else.
By the way,
it seems like the downside would be somewhere else.
And
then
we're.
I can't say
like the empathy, maybe it's some sort of depression. Like,
no, but we're trying to get at, again, remember, what I'm trying to show you, I'm just, this is where I am, is just trying to show you that we have this virtue called temperance. We know what it is, moderation. And we don't have a good Yiddish word for it, because Yiddish word for it tends to be the extreme word, like precious. And they try to translate this as precious, people don't understand.
Right.
Or sometimes it's translated as Zahiris, by the way. Zahiris is the Rambam's translation, but the Rambam himself translated sometimes Zahiris, sometimes Yiraschet, weirdly. Temperance is Yiraschet. Yiraschet doesn't mean being afraid of doing an avaira, it means not being too a big fresse. This is the Rambam himself translated this way. So we have these three Hebrew words that correspond to the virtue of temperance sometimes in our sources. That it just should have totally misunderstood. He thought Zahiris means being careful. I think that's wrong, at least in the Rambam. In the Mishnah, I don't know. The middle of Zahiris means temperance. And it seems to be easy to understand that a temperance is a limit to not being too much of a, taking too much pleasure, or it's something about having the correct amount of pleasure. That's how we're trying to get at. And you could see that person that we're describing now who just doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't get that there's such a thing as being in a comfortable temperature, or seems to not get it. That's not what we're talking about. People would say something else. That he doesn't have an assign. He's just born without, like, he's a sudas. So he doesn't have a feeling for that kind of pleasure. But I don't think that's the idea. We would say something like, he's not having the correct amount of pleasure. He's having too little pleasure. Just that usually we don't really have this problem, and most people don't have this problem, therefore I think it's overrated to talk about it. The Rambam talks about it a lot, but also some for different reasons. Like, it's another question, why does the Rambam talk so much about against this precious? How many people did the Rambam know that were over precious? I have no idea. You seem to be very worried about it. Don't be okay. How many people are fasting too much? Like, seriously, who is this person? Three weirdos.
Scenes.
What?
Scenes.
Yeah, not the Rambam says Christian priest, but also how many priests are there? There's thousands of Christians and a few of them are becoming priests. It's not like
your technical Christian.
It's a big thing.
Christianity was pretty big then, though.
But that's like maybe.
No, there is this thing of like the ideology part, right?
So maybe,
like,
maybe
you think that that's what the ideal is, and everyone is falling short. Like,
maybe they have an outsized influence, those people, and whatever downside there is, they don't get those milas. Meaning,
the other people also don't.
And as much as the ideal people don't get milas, it affects other people. Yes, but the point is, if your ideal people are prushim, they're gonna be missing something, right? Because they're not.
People sometimes make this case, like for example, anti-Christian polemics. Or Jews who are having problems with Christians make a case something like this. That, so Christians traditionally, Paul almost explicitly says this, say that the best thing to be is celibate, but we'll like give a concession to the normal people and let them be married, you know. And then when they're married, they should act, you know, with chastity and in the correct ways. But they're really
afterwards.
What?
Maybe go to the mikveh afterwards.
Afterwards, before, whatever. So, but he still has decided, says that this, like really you should be totally celibate. And people would make the claim, I don't know if it's true. People could make a claim, the claim that you're trying to make. That's something like that because of this, there isn't a good Christian ideal of being happily married or being temperately married. Let's talk about, to talk specifically about this thing. Because you're like ideal people are not married. And sometimes people say, like, if you go to the priest for advice of marriage, he has no advice to give you. There's actually, I saw a priest say it's the opposite. Because, like, people come to you with problems with their girlfriends. Such nonsense. You see right through it. You just, guy is never stuck in this nonsense. But I'm not, I've seen, like, yeah, get over it. Like, move on. So it's not entirely always true that if you're out of it, you don't have good advice. But yeah. People sometimes say this. Like the Bechus Karetzer was also, he's the one, no, he's not the same one. He had the similar opinions of, I think he was on the side of being moderately pleasures in life. And he said that he doesn't understand why people go to the Mizritcha Magid. The Mizritcha Magid is a Purish, he does, and he's celibate, and you can't talk with such a person. Like, that's how you're going to talk to the guy. He's not living in the same world as you.
That's how Maimon got divorced.
No, that's not why. Different reasons. That is, there is such an argument. I don't know how true it is. Like, people say nowadays, maybe, like, you say something like this, like, but that would be a much broader thing. For talk specifically about this thing of moderation and pleasures, like, you don't have a model for that, and you therefore you end up going to the other extreme. I don't know how much true this is.
Why isn't there more that you would imagine that meters all affect each other, so it affects some other thing, and it keeps, and I don't know, you lose somewhere in other places as well.
What do you mean? What do you lose?
You, ultimately, it should be that you're going to be lacking in you're going to be lacking in your knowledge as well.
Oh, like you were saying before, that if someone is eats too little or doesn't know the difference in good food, then when he does achnasas achim, he's not going to be a good machnas oirach either. Something like that. This is the story that we're talking about. Is that what you mean to say? But that's back to the problem of living in this world. And then you say it's true. So living as a human being in the fleshy world, okay, maybe you want to be a Purish, then you should never come out of your monastery. But if you ever come out, then you have to learn what good food and so on is, because otherwise you're going to not be able to deal with people correctly. There's such an argument to be made.
No, I think
someone could say something like, if you're an ascetic, then you shouldn't ever be a dayan, because you don't realize how important money is.
And maybe there's something universal that you're missing. Maybe there's something universal that you're missing. Maybe there's something more universal
like what?
That you're missing. I don't know. You won't really understand between a human and an animal. There's something something universal about a human that you just won't understand, because you don't partake in the human action that the way it should be, the way you should. I'm not in that, it's hard for me to say, but it's exactly what you're saying. I don't know, like, the way a human eats.
But this is a question, like, something like, is the person that we're imagining in some flyover country, who never had a good restaurant or anything, is he a better person in any sense? Like, right? And there's the other, I'll tell you the opposite argument. The opposite argument is something like this. Like, what's the difference between romance and porn, right? Romance is just a higher level version of the same thing. And there's the argument that Rambam himself makes in Chelek Gimel and Moed, and he says that he thinks that people who write poetry about sex are worse than people that just have sex. Because the Rambam writes Klishe Mehavai. You know the Rambam?
Yeah.
It's like just dressing up this very bad thing in some fancy way. But the opposite argument is no, that if you just have sex, then you're just being an animal. If you give it words, you write some poetry about it, then you're having some kind of human level of it. Same thing can be said for food and for all these things. And that's where we get this idea that it's not actually, when we talk about temperance or moderation, we're not talking about, we don't think of someone getting as far away from pleasure as possible. We think of someone having pleasure in the right way and in the wrong way. And this is what leads us to see, but you see very clearly, okay, I'm going to stop here. I don't know what halacha is about all these things. We do see from this very simply, I think if we agree on some level that that's bad, we can see in some sense that right away that the virtue of moderation doesn't consist in an extreme in the sense of an extreme in the sense of pleasure. Therefore, we have to give it a more abstract definition, right? And this more abstract definition is going to be shared with the other virtues, because all virtues are a kind of knowing the correct one between options which are more and less. But we also see from this that the more and less is something like an analogy or something like a. They're not really like, it's not like we should, we're not saying, it's very clear, we see very clearly that we're not trying to like find the correct amount of pleasure and say it's the middle amount.
Right.
We're working the opposite, we're trying to understand what moderation is, and we see, I can show you that there's a too much and a too little in that, and therefore you can see that whatever moderation is, and therefore whatever most other virtues at least would be, would consist of knowing the correct amount. Mm-hmm. That's all, that's enough for today, 10:40. Mm-hmm. There's a moderation in how long the shiur should be. I already told you last week, that Aristotle explicitly and the Rambam don't believe in moderation in the intellectual virtues. But it's not that we don't act in moderation in them. And I read more than one person saying, and already early people, saying that, like, in reality, if you see the way we discussed already, how Aristotle uses authority versus questioning, or in general, he does seem to always try to be in the middle, even intellectually. And there's even, like Aristotle in the beginning of this book says, that even how much to learn is something that ethics has to tell you, that politics has to tell you, which is the same thing as ethics, right? Because the politician, the king, will decide, this goes back to our discussion earlier, it says that, and this is a weird thing that he says, if you think that that the contemplative life is the highest thing. He says the king will have to decide how many clothing allowed there can be. It says in the ethics. And I think that I would also agree with that in some sense. It doesn't mean that it's higher to be a king than to be a philosopher, but it does seem to mean that in reality in the city, the king is going to decide who should be a philosopher or how many philosophers he needs. And there's maybe there's a too much and too little in that also. Okay, that's the story. Oh, and also, Rav, I have to finish. So Rav, what's his name? Rav Levi ben Avram. The Levi Aschain said that therefore there's two extremes. You could be only a philosopher and only a ma'amin, and the answer is you should be in between. That's why you should be more nevuchim, like a philosopher who also is a believer. Okay. Yeah.